Welcome to Season 7, Episode 8 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we'll talk to Graham Morrison about Linux Voice, have a command line love, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the #UPC IRC channel on the Freenode network. I'm Mark.
Yes, you are.
With me this week are Tony.
Good evening, Mark.
Alan.
Hello.
And Laura.
Hiya.
Right. Oh, game show mode deactivated. Tony, what have you been up to?
Well, mostly not shaving.
Oh, yes. I just realised who you look like. Conchita Wurst.
The Austrian winner of Eurovision.
Yes. It's the giant wig that gives it away.
Yeah. Well, I decided that, you know, having interviewed Mark Shuttleworth a few weeks ago, it was a good look. The whole beard thing adds, you know, gravitas, and hasn't made me wealthy yet.
Right. So.
But you can't see the sideburns anymore.
No, I don't think correlation is a causation there.
But more to the point, he didn't have a beard when he got rich.
Now.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh.
Sorry to break it to you, Tony.
You're really harshing my buzz now, so I can tell you.
Okay, then Alan.
I can quickly tell you that lots of generous open source people have been donating to my Malawi fund, which has been really interesting to see, and thank you very much.
Are you going to Malawi?
Yeah, later this year. Yeah, to climb a mountain for charity.
You don't like to talk about it.
I don't like to talk about it, but I do like to talk about it. I've just £200 left, so hopefully I'll be able to get that in the next couple of weeks.
When's the deadline?
Sometime in June, about 20th of June. So we're going to put a link in the show notes. If anybody who's listening can donate, even just like five, maybe 10 quid.
Maybe we should all troll you and just £1.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Where does the money go to?
It goes to a charity called Amica, who provide healthcare for people who live in Africa and help train up nurses in the UK as well, giving them a really important experience.
Not just giving you a jolly in Africa.
No.
It doesn't sound particularly jolly, actually, from what you've said.
I am going to get bitten quite badly by lots of mosquitoes. So if you can spare a couple of quid,
worth it.
Link in the show notes. God,
please. You just get bitten really badly.
Yeah, you know you want to.
Alan, what have you been doing?
I upgraded our Bitfolk VPS that we use on for the podcast that stream through and we serve the website off of. And I upgraded it from the ye old and crusty Ubuntu 10.04 to bright and shiny 12.04.
Great.
Yes.
Another 3 years and we'll be on 14.04.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I might upgrade it again soon. But yeah, it went pretty okay.
You'll get overconfident now trying to get up to 14.04.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that.
Break the website.
I'm not going to do it yet. But yeah, it worked. You know, I did the upgrade over SSH and it asked me lots of questions and I think I made vaguely educated decisions about, I want to take the package maintainer's version of this file. No, I don't want to take the package maintainer's version of this file.
Oh, that's why the PHP config broke.
Yes. I figured it was probably best to take the new PHP INE from the maintainer than keep our one, I think. No.
It wasn't that broke the.
This is just Git all over again, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I realized that actually we have Apache 2 and Lighty, both installed at the same time. But we'd shut down Apache and we were using Lighty. But unfortunately, I hadn't removed the run level thing. So when it rebooted after upgrading, Apache started up instead of Lighty, and Lighty didn't. I mean, it all worked, but So most of the issues are actually, pilot error, not, the upgrade just worked, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. Happy days.
Normal service has been resumed.
Yes, indeed.
Laura, what have you been doing?
It was my birthday.
Hooray! Happy birthday.
Yay! Where's the cake?
You've eaten it.
Oh.
That came 250 miles.
Wow.
Gosh.
That cake does travel well.
Your kitchen is really far away.
Yes. And I've been trying to learn about GitHub pages.
Ah, how's that going?
Not too bad.
I noticed that you'd posted a GitHub page.
I did, yes. I'm trying to work out how to do Markdown and ASCII doc as well.
Cool.
Awesome.
Good luck.
Mm.
What about you, Mark?
I have been listening to Little Brother by Cory Doctorow.
Oh.
Listening to it? I've read the book.
Yes, I'm listening to the audiobook.
Ah, who reads the audiobook?
I can't remember. An American man.
That was not Stephen Fry then.
No. Yeah, I got Homeland, which is the sequel, read by Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton
of Star Trek and other fame.
Geek fame.
From the Humble Bundle, but I hadn't read Little Brother, so I thought I'd better get that first. So I bought that off Cory Doctorow's website. You just get a DRM-free zip file full of MP3s, and
and then he sends you a nice email saying thanks, which I thought was quite nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of Humble Bundle, I bought some comics from Humble Bundle comic thing this week, and that's really good. Yeah. And we need a comic reader for Ubuntu Touch. Please, someone make one so I can read comics on my Ubuntu phone. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, we're going to talk to Graham Morrison now from Linux Voice, the magazine. So
let's do that.
Let's do that.
Okay, on the line we have Graham Morrison from Linux Voice. How are you doing, Graham?
Not bad, thanks, Alan. Second podcast in a day for me.
Oh.
Wow.
And best.
Yeah, we don't talk about that
Absolutely.
Other one.
Absolutely, unequivocally.
So, what is the Linux Voice empire?
Well, there's four of us. The four of us who were previously at the Linux Format, Ben, Mike, Andrew, and I. And we also have a wonderful art person who does all of our design and layout and the wonderful cover that went on issue two, and her name is Stacey.
And so we talked to Andrew at the end of last year, and at that time you were midway through your Indiegogo campaign to raise funds to create a magazine, and clearly that's panned out well.
Yeah, I think as I remember it, I might not have been involved with the Indiegogo campaign.
No, you weren't at all.
Were you still employed at that point?
No, I wasn't. I was under a restricted covenant from my previous employer, which meant that I couldn't be involved in anything to do with magazines. So I had nothing to do with it.
Okay, so
of course.
Maybe now some of the others have told you a bit about it, and you can.
They've got you up to speed with it.
Yeah.
It did go remarkably well, and I know that we had no idea really what the response might be from something like that, from trying to crowdfund a print magazine. We had no idea what the community response would be, we were after £90,000, and in the end I think we got £127,000.
Wow.
We were and still are completely overwhelmed by the support we've had and the positivity, and yes, makes us feel great about doing it, because there was an awful lot of uncertainty. In fact, I remember last meeting you all at OddCamp, October last year?
Yeah.
And that for me was just a real freefall moment, having handed in my notice and not really knowing what the future had in store. And I loved my job. I loved my job at Linux Format, and I love doing what we're doing.
And at what point was the tipping point that you all or that the other guys fed back to you their feeling of that this was all going to be a success?
I don't think we really knew until, and I still actually find it difficult to believe that we've done it and we are doing it, to be honest.
Well, I've got three magazines on my desk that say you did.
And honestly, I don't want to complain because it's wonderful, but we've been so ridiculously busy. I just sent issue four to the printers late last Friday. And so we're already, Andrew and Ben came over today. We're already in the thick of issue five. I think if you look at the curve for crowdfunding, it always starts off with a lot of momentum. Then there's a dip, a kind of doldrums where many kind of projects don't come out of that period.
Yeah, we know a bit about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Say when the guys come over and you start planning, you've just put one to bed, and which I believe is the right phrase, and you start planning the next one. What does that planning consist of? Is it sat round in a pub just, chewing the fat and figuring out what crank out another magazine? Is there like a blueprint for what the magazine should look like, or is it a lot more detailed than that?
I think none of us are actually proper magazine people.
Now you tell us.
Yeah, and I gave you my money.
I was at Linux Format for 9 years, but before that, I was a Linux person. And so I don't know. I've never had any kind of journalism or publishing training.
Right.
I imagine the right thing to do is to sit down and think about what the kind of editorial style of the magazine should be, but that's not what we do. We kind of think, yeah, this is cool, this is awesome, I'd like to do this. Other people have emailed us ideas, and we all kind of agree on what the editorial formula should be. And so it's really when we're stuck for ideas that it becomes a problem. And we haven't actually been stuck for ideas since we did Linux Voice.
Okay, so it sounds like you've had a lot of success. Has anything gone wrong yet, or anything which you think, if you were to try and do this again, you'd have done it differently?
I'm also, it has been successful. We still don't know. It's still difficult. We're still negotiating the breadth of distribution. We still really haven't got sales figures back from the rest of the world or the independent news agents in the UK. And so I think, yes, it's been a success. I don't know whether it's going to be as enough of a success that in 5 years' time, which is what we want it to be.
Right.
So in terms of what we'd do differently, maybe we would have done it sooner.
So do you not know yet if it's going to be sustainable beyond the sort of initial subscription period, or does it look like that you're at least going to be able to keep on doing it at the current level?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely sustainable. There's four of us, and it's difficult to... I don't know... It's difficult because it's been a great success. There's plenty of money to keep the magazine going for a couple of years, 3 years.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah. What we want to do is we want to make this a 10-year thing, a 15-year thing. On Friday, for example, we put up one of the features from the first issue, which was about Munich City Council converting their PCs to Linux. And that's, I think, what we want Linux Voice to be as a success. We want to actually have an effect. It's one thing to say that we want to give back to the community, and we want to be around long enough and for people to see that it's genuine enough that it actually there is a product from that.
And in terms of feedback, I mean, obviously sales figures is one kind of feedback. What kind of feedback have you had from people who've committed to the crowdfunding campaign, and what feedback from your readership? We know people who back campaigns can sometimes feel they have a right to tell you how to run your business. Have you had much of that, or has it been mostly positive? How's that come?
I mean, yeah, it's difficult to not sound sycophantic. Everything has been incredibly positive from the 2,800 subscribers that we now have. We've only had one person who's cancelled, and that's wow, because they couldn't afford it, which I think is remarkable. We did do a DVD on the first two issues, and producing the DVD is expensive, and so while we want to do a DVD several times a year, we don't know what kind of effect that's going to have on our newsstand sales and whether we're going to have to reassess whether that was the right strategy or not.
Is that expensive from a time-consuming point of view that you're not making, you know, using that time to make the magazine, or is it time-consuming just making the plastic disc and putting it on the cover?
Well, Mike, who used to be the DVD creator at Linux Format, put the DVDs together. They required some kind of technical jiggery pokery with ISO Linux to get the 8 gig dual layer thing working, but the main cost is, I mean, you can see that when we get £127,000 from the crowd campaign, if we're spending £8,000 or £10,000 producing a DVD per issue, can do it, but we want to see how it's going to affect sales and whether readers in a shop are going to think it's important.
Right. And not everybody has a player on their laptops anymore.
No, and
there's this thing called the internet as well.
Yeah,
and you can download stuff.
This is something that comes up and did come up time and time again, and we don't know. And it's difficult from the Indiegogo perspective and from an online perspective. The feedback we have is that it isn't important, but they're not the kind of people, perhaps, that buy a magazine in the shops.
Yeah.
There's a perception of quality and perhaps better value if there's a DVD on the cover, but...
Is it worth thinking about going back to 1.44-inch floppy disks? They're probably a lot cheaper.
So, I guess they may even be more expensive, but that would be fun.
I just suddenly had a flashback to Mike OS on a floppy disk.
Alan's had an idea.
No.
Oh,
so One of the things I noticed, I was looking through WH Smith's the other day, and one of the things I noticed is there's a raft of not just computing magazines, but there's those, I don't know what you call them in the publishing industry, but there's like compilations of articles that are pulled together for one particular topic. Would you consider doing that kind of thing to supplement the magazine? Because there seems to be a load of those on the shelf.
Yeah, they call them bookazines, and they do entirely recycled content. We used to do quite a few of them, and from a business perspective, they sell. In fact, they've been growing in face of the decline of the content, the magazines that actually creates the content for them. Mm. I think we might do. We haven't actually discussed it, but if they sell, and the money comes back to Linux Voice, and we are able to do more with it, then I think it's probably a good thing. Regardless, all of our content is going to be CC by SA within 9 months anyway. So people who can and want to will be able to get the content, whatever we do. But if we happen to package that one day into a bookazine, then I don't know.
One of the things we heard about when we spoke to Andrew before Christmas was the intention to pay contributors ahead of yourselves, I guess, the Linux Voice staff, and to make sure that it wasn't just, you know, fanboys writing in their own personal tips and tricks and somebody combining it into a magazine. How's that approach working out?
Well, I think it was part of the Indiegogo campaign text that we had a flat rate of £100 per page for contributors. I think Ben, Mike and I write maybe 50 or 60 pages per issue. So there's a good 50 plus pages written by other contributors who we paid right from the very beginning and paid promptly, unlike other publishing companies.
But that's looking like it's a sustainable option. You're finding writers at that rate, and it's sustainable and working.
Yes. I mean, it's very similar to what we did before. So we are working with some of the same writers, but at the same time, I think we've almost created a new. In fact, if you look at the percentage statistics in the UK, anyway, we've expanded the market for Linux and open source magazines by something like 20 or 30%. So we've brought new readers in.
Wow.
We've not taken all of our readership from other magazines,
mm.
And we've brought other writers in. But with them, with new people, it can take time to. We're working on such. Strict time limits that at least with these first three or four issues, it's difficult to predict whether somebody's copy is going to be good enough. But we're continually working with people and working with copy to get copy into such a state that we can include other people right now. It's like this first week of a new issue is always admin and working on people who are writing copy for us.
And does that, you know, I mean, it sounds like it's very much like a software release. Early in the cycle, there's a lot of planning, and then at the last minute, you've got a deadline to hit, and it's, you know, working till all hours, you know, scrabbling around trying to get the content done to get it out of the door. Is that pretty much?
It is. Yeah, I mean, our deadline was Friday. I think this time last week, I had 12 pages to write, which right. which is over 10,000 words.
And do you not just write the content? Who does the typesetting and getting the images, screenshots, photos, stock art, that kind of stuff? Is that all you four guys as well?
Yeah, for our own stuff, we have kind of templates that we send out to people, and we kind of expect them to provide us with as much of the page furniture as possible. Although in reality, it's kind of a full-time job chasing our writers for that stuff. But yes, and then all of that goes to Stacey. I mean, it is a full-time job taking this raw copy and laying it out and making it look good in the magazine that she's effectively created in terms of its style, which is in other publishing companies, when you create a magazine, it has taken 6 or 9 months in my experience. So
wow.
She's done a wonderful job.
Fabulous.
So I was just going to ask about the tools you use for designing and laying out the magazine.
Here we go. It's coming. Yeah. Graham, get yourself ready.
I assume it's Scribus and LibreOffice and all the best open source tools that are available.
It's Adobe InDesign, and I think that might have been mentioned in the Indiegogo campaign as well. We would love to actually work with Inkscape and Scribus people. In fact. At Linux Format, Nick Veach wrote a section of the magazine using Scribus and InDesign.
Yes.
And If you ever speak to him about it, it took him a long time. And especially at the moment, Stacey, for example, isn't a Linux person. She's got to work with the tools that she knows best, and that is InDesign. But also, when really there have been Saturday mornings where there's been a mess up with some of the copy we've been sending, and we're sending the PDFs directly to the printers who are waiting to print 23,000 copies of the PDFs we send them. Unlike in our previous jobs, there's no buffer. There's nobody to call us up and say this doesn't look right.
Right.
And having that kind of confidence in using InDesign, because that's what we used before, and knowing that when we output these PDFs, that's what we're going to get on the page 23,000 times over.
And I guess you don't have a giant sales team selling advertising in your magazine either.
No, there's none. I mean, if you've seen the magazine, there's
oh, it's lovely.
There's a
half. I've not opened a single one of the three that I've got on my desk, because I get the PDF first and I read that, and then one comes through the letterbox. I'm like, yay, and not read it. I haven't even opened them yet. Collector's item.
and I'm you should see my garage down here in my house where I'm sat.
23,000 copies
of PDFs.
Well, there's 300 in the garage. It's quite funny trying to get pushchairs and things outside around. But yes, we should be selling more adverts, because especially in these early stages, they would really help with our cash flow, because we don't get money back from W.H. Smith's for a few months. We don't get money back from our US and foreign sales for 9 months a year.
Wow.
And that's what I'm talking about, really, in terms of how the magazine's doing.
So do you have to track all these payments from overseas places and W.H. Smith and chase them? Are you your own finance department as well?
Our distributor handles that, although we're in very close contact with them over, on a weekly basis, but they're the people who have arranged and helped us to arrange to get the magazine into all the places we've been able to get it into.
Okay, I see.
And do you find the podcast, which we haven't talked about, but kind of goes along with the magazine, do you find the podcast drives people to buy the magazine, or does the magazine, drive listeners to the podcast, or are they two entirely separate things that share a name?
I think. And this is something I only realized after leaving the previous place, was just how important the podcast has been in what Linux Voice has become, and how important Linux podcasts are in general to the community and the community that all of them.
Well, of course.
I can really feel it, and I feel like I see it a lot clearer now. And I didn't particularly realize that in our. I mean, I did it all on my laptop before, and I'd cycle in with the thing on my back, and we'd record it in an office. And we didn't really see it inside that office where I couldn't see daylight. But since leaving, since kind of throwing out crowd surfing, I do really feel it. It is important, and I think it's a different proposition when the magazine's on the shelves in W.H. Smith's. I'm not sure they may be podcast listeners, but in actually making this a reality and driving the community, yes, I think it's a fundamental part of it.
And have you seen copies of the magazine yourself with your own eyes in W.H. Smith's?
Yeah, I have. I was probably the last member of the team to do so, because, like lots of people, actually, I went into lots of places and couldn't find a copy. Each time we can't find a copy, we email the distributor and say, what's going on with this? But, yeah, I think it was issue 3 that I first saw on the shelves of a magazine. It's difficult. It's an amazing moment, because for many, many years we talked of doing something similar to this in a non-committal way that had nothing to do with what eventually happened.
Of course. Brilliant. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you, Graham, and we wish you all the best for the next 10 years of Linux Voice.
And I hope so.
And we'll maybe catch up with you over a beer at the next Old Camp.
Yeah. And if people want to look at the magazine or subscribe to it or download it, where can they go?
Well, the main site is at linuxvoice.com. Shop.linuxvoice.com takes you to our store page. But I think you get the idea.
Just Google Linux Voice.
I'm a terrible salesman. Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks very much, Graham. Take care.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Ian. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
And it's time now for a command line love, which is particularly interesting that this time it's called Betty.
Oh, Betty.
Thank you, Mark.
I had money on me being the one to do that, yeah. But there we go. Yeah.
Well, he just can't shut up, that guy. He's always talking in inappropriate times.
What is it?
Well, Betty seems to be a command line version of Siri, which is the something to do with Apple phones, and you talk at
A voice recognition.
Stuff.
So you can like shout at your terminal.
No,
is that what you're saying?
It's sort of like supposed to be like a natural language parser for Bash. So yeah. rather than having to type, you know, grep thing dot slash, you can type, give me all files in this directory that contain Word. And then it will...
Wow, that sounds really, really good, instead of typing LS.
Yeah. Well, if you think about grep, it's quite a complex command to remember all of the switches. Whereas if you can say what you mean... I want everything in this directory that contains this word, and then it will pick out that you're saying you want files and you want this directory and you want that word, and then it'll work out that grep command does that and do that for you.
And is it only work in with specific tools, or is it like tailored for Linux or OS X?
I think it's written for Bash basically. So I think it's been developed on OS X, but it should the same Bash commands work on
Bash.
How does it work?
Bash. I think it's like regular expression parser that sort of takes the string you type in as one argument, and then it parses out what that's likely to mean, and if it comes up with more than one suggestion, it lets you pick one. And so you can like add your own ones. I mean, some of the examples there, you could say, you know, Betty, give me permission to this directory, and it will do a chown command, work out what your user is, and change this directory to you.
That's quite clear.
Betty, unzip archive.zip to this directory, like, so that you can make sure that it's going into a subdirectory and you're not giving it the wrong flag, and it's going to spit it all into, mix it all with the current files, and you can have it do sort of other more commands which might be more complex, like dbus commands. So you can say Betty play Spotify, and it'll make Spotify play, which would normally be a bit tricky to do from the command line.
Plugins and stuff, so people can, like, developers can add their own bits and bobs that attach to, like you say, Spotify or something else.
Yeah, I think it's just if you look at the GitHub page, it's quite simple in terms of just being able to add your own bits to it.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly how it works. I've not tried it myself, but it looks like it's just a case of like adding more patterns to match for, and then adding how they parse into.
So I could add in the feature to sudo make me a sandwich.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think there is some silliness in there as well.
Oh, good.
If you say things like that.
Very much like Siri, then.
Very much like Siri, yes. Just hours of playing around trying to find all the Easter eggs and not actually using it for anything proper.
Does it actually work?
It seems to. I've not tried it, but from looking at the code, it looks like it should do.
If only that's excellent. How we could test all software.
Yeah, it's really simple code, so.
Excellent.
It's easy to tell.
Fantastic. Yes. Well, it sounds like a useful command line, love, and we will get on with the rest of the show.
And now it's time for some feedback. So a friend of the show, Dave Jeffrey, said, these days, if you want to make a photograph look old, I use the GMic plugin for the GIMP. It's in the Ubuntu repository, and I highly recommend it. You can even choose the film stock you want to emulate.
Oh, so this was after your command line love last week,
yeah.
Which was, what was it?
Line Instagram?
That was it. Brick something.
Yeah, well, it used Convert from Image Magic to add an effect over the top of an existing image to make it look a bit red.
Right.
It seems to be that's basically all it did was make it red.
So this is a bit more advanced.
So there are GIMP plugins that let you Instagramify your pictures as well.
Does sound like it, yeah.
That's quite cool.
Yeah, thanks for writing in, Dave.
Yeah.
Scott Hodgson emailed in saying, I want to lock down Ubuntu 14.04 for users other than admin. This includes no editing icons in Unity, no access to system settings, and only show or have access to programs associated with a group. I've searched for a while now on using 12.04 and can only find Menu Libre or EaseAIM for configuring the menu. It's for a charity I help in my spare time, so I need it to be a generic release on all machines that's easy to maintain. I've used Elementary OS previously, but found some elements of it incompatible with software for admin use. Any help would be appreciated.
Yeah, this is a good idea for like kiosk type computers and ones that, you know, where any changes get reverted when you log out or, you know, undone or something like that. Might be similar. It sounds like he wants individual users to have access to stuff, but very limited access.
Yes, and not be able to just open the dash and drag new things into the launcher on a whim and stuff like that. Which I suppose Unity doesn't really provide a way of you not being able to do that, does it?
I don't know. I don't know. It may well. You may well be able to kludge that with App Armor and have a security profile to stop it, or you may be able to do something like make the directory read only that's got all the .desktop files in it, .local share applications or something that in the home directory, so they can't actually add things to the launcher. But I don't know how Unity would react when you do that. It might have a bit of a hissy fit not being able to write to places that it expects to be able to.
Interesting
I don't know.
Experiment.
Yes, certainly is. If anyone else has had any experience in locking down Ubuntu and making it less configurable for users, then do let us know. Send us an email, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
And Stuart Langridge has been in touch via the IRC channel, #UUPC, on the Freenode network. Just to clarify something that we said in our last episode around the legal ruling from the European Union Court of Justice, which is, he just wants to clarify that the court held that the claimant, who was somebody who was asking to have some information about them removed from Google, the claimant could not require the publishing website to remove the stuff about them because that's public interest, but did hold that Google had to remove links to it because it was giving it undue prominence. So it's not about suppressing something completely from the internet.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Well, just Google the thing that people use to find everything on the internet.
Just use a different search engine and you'll find the stuff anyway.
There are different search engines?
Well, apparently. Oh, so I'm told.
Yahoo and Bing, I guess.
DuckDuckGo.
Just a noise.
That's all your feedback.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that entertains, engages, or enrages you, tweet @UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
That's all for this show. Thank you for listening. The next live show will be on Wednesday, the 28th of May at 8:30.
In the evening.
Well, I tell you what, you go to the calendar page on the website and it will probably show it in your local time.
If it's working.
Probably.
Well, they were all over the place this week.
Yeah.
Well, there was somebody upgraded the server and broke it.
No.
Yeah. Well, the next
broke
few...
Broke the PHP.
No, broke the Google calendar. I don't think so.
Yeah. The next few are in the calendar now, anyway. Nothing to do with me. Anyway.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Join us.
And good night.
We'll rant offline.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.